Good day, everyone. My name is Douglas Bennett. I am a client portfolio manager at Fontobel's Quality Growth Boutique. I am here with Remy Shalat, deputy portfolio manager of our global equity strategy. Ramiz, good to have you on our podcast series again, and good to talk to you today about global markets and investing in these volatile times.
Good morning, Doug, and good morning to everyone out there.
Thanks, Ramiz. Okay, so to set the stage, let's start off, Ramiz, by asking about your views on the global economy. We are already experiencing a contraction in the globe's two biggest economies, the U.S. and China, as well as in most other countries. In short, this is a clear global slowdown in GDP. What do you make of this economic decline, and where do you see some light at the end of the tunnel?
Right. Well, look, firstly, Doug, the economic impact is substantial. You know, the downgrades for GDP in Q2 are looking very substantial. In the U.S., we're talking about potentially mid-teens declines. So it's not only the service sector that's taken a large hit, but the second derivative of sectors such as transport, the financial sector. So the first thing is a substantial impact. And secondly, the duration is uncertain because we aren't seeing a tapering off of cases yet in the key hotspots like Italy and Spain, Germany, and even in the US. And given the extent of the shock, and there are certain players that are over-leveraged in sectors like energy or the airlines, there could be some corporate casualties and unemployment will certainly increase. Now, on the positive side, policy response is clearly coming through and is coming through globally. Monetary, first of all, we've seen it from the Fed and the ECB and other central banks. And on the fiscal side, we have seen a lot of substantial discussions and actual concrete measures. Now, on the recovery, the substantial quarantine measures we've seen, whether that's travel bans or lockdowns, should help reduce the rate of spread and hopefully slow it down substantially. And as you mentioned in China, because of these measures, we have actually now seen a situation where new cases have pretty much declined to very low single digit. So there is some encouragement there that China has been able to contain this, and hopefully some of these measures that we've seen will result in containment. But the key thing is the extent of the recovery and the timing is still quite uncertain, but we do expect that to come through in the second half and potentially 2021.
Right. Well, just since you mentioned China, and that looks to be the country that could be seeing some light at the end of the tunnel, are there specific sectors or companies that you feel are already benefiting there?
Well, we've actually just had Tencent, the key gaming bellwether, report last week, and they actually reported resilient numbers and a fairly positive outlook for Q1, which is interesting because Q1 was when we've seen the depth of lockdown in China. So we know that gaming demand is quite resilient. We also know that advertising relating to e-commerce demand is quite resilient. And the early indications are that Alibaba's e-commerce segment is recovering in March, although still well below what it had been prior. So gaming and e-commerce are two sectors that should be quite resilient. It's still early days. You know, we've got a lot of companies that will still report, and I think you're going to see a gradual recovery into Q2.
Right. Well, moving away from China then, the central banks are now entering strongly. We had again a new package of policy measures from the Federal Reserve announced just today. And as you mentioned, the governments are discussing fiscal measures too. What sectors do you think, based on these stimuli that they're coming through, could see quicker recoveries, and which sectors may lag, do you think?
Well, you know, the sectors that are more exposed to essential services like medtech has been impacted because people are delaying procedures, particularly elective procedures. But those procedures can't be delayed for too long, and they will come back quicker. I think software should be fairly resilient as well. You know, I think the last service that people are going to cut would be an ERP system, for example, and SAP should be well placed in that regard, Microsoft as well. So I think that will be fairly resilient and should come back to growth fairly quickly. I think what will take a little bit longer will be discretionary. You know, discretionary spend won't necessarily come back in a hurry because a lot of consumers' budgets will be fairly tight at this point in time. And until they have the confidence that we're through this crisis, you know, then discretionary spend will come back. And advertising relating to that will also take some time to come back. And I think travel which is kind of in the eye of the storm right now, we're confident it'll come back. But again, you know, some of that spend may take, rather than a few months, could take 6 to 12 months to start coming back. But we do expect that to come back. And finally, you know, I'd say industrials, big capital expenditure items, again, because of the tight liquidity situation, could take longer to come back. So that could be more of a, you know, 2021, 2022 type recovery.
Mm-hmm. Well, so just on that issue of CapEx and then companies with potentially higher debts, some of these companies may not make it, right? What do you think investors should do in their portfolios to reduce exposure to some of these companies where there are real debt issues?
Well, this is the key, Doug. I think survivability really is the key right now. So it doesn't matter how strong a company's competitive advantages are, but if there's a question about survivability, well, then those companies are really going to be questioned over the next 3 to 6 months in terms of whether or not they can make it through. So I think investors really need to look, firstly, you know, at how much of a free cash flow hit there will be to the companies that they own. Do they have any significant maturities that are due over the next 12 months? And taking into account both free cash flow and maturities, what's their access to liquidity? How strong is a balance sheet? And can you make it through a very difficult period in the next 12 months? If these companies can make it through, then I think they could be in a stronger position relative to some of the weaker companies, and that could allow them to actually take some market share. So that's the key, survivability and the strength coming out of this.
All right. Well, let's move on to a different sector and one that we know a lot about at Fontobel, but that's a consumer staples one. So here it seems there's been a broad sell-off where investors have, to some extent, to use the term, thrown the baby out with the bathwater and sold indiscriminately. Why do you think this phenomenon's occurred?
Well, what we've seen in staples is that there has been some differentiation. So the staples that are more exposed to on-trade consumption are the ones that have been hit a little bit harder relative to those that are more immune and less discretionary, like a Nestle or a Unilever, or food retail, you know, like a Walmart or a Walmex. So the key is, what's the exposure to the on-trade? And if you look at a company like companies like ABI or Coke or Pepsi, roughly, you know, a third of their business is exposed to on-trade, and restaurants, when I talk about on-trade, really restaurants and bars, that consumption is going to be hit pretty substantially. But we're only talking about a third of exposure, and a proportion of that will actually be picked up in terms of stronger off-trade. So not all that one third is going to disappear over this period. So, you know, what we would say here is that, firstly, investors may be underestimating what the pickup could be in terms of increased demand off-trade. And secondly, if we do see a slow recovery coming out of this in the second half of 2021, these names are actually well-placed, because once the stores do come back, what we've seen even in 2009 is the majority of these companies actually reported positive organic growth, right? And so the staples, I think, in terms of the defensiveness, should actually play through in a slower recovery sort of scenario. So, you know, while we've seen really substantial declines for some of these names, I think it's worth bearing that in mind, that they actually could prove quite resilient if you take a, you know, on a 12 to 24 month period. And they were actually reporting good organic growth even leading into this crisis. So I think the staples are actually well placed to come out of this. And they all have healthy balance sheets as well. Even an ABI, I think, which has some more questions about leverage, you know, their leverage is, their maturities are actually quite spread out over the next 5 years. And we think that they have ample access to liquidity.
Okay, well, let's circle back to a sector you mentioned earlier, and that's the discretionary consumption one. And then that would include some retail companies, for instance. Do you think investors can take advantage of opportunities in these sectors?
Well, look, discretionary is a space where you really have to assess whether or not on a five-year basis, is there a material change in the valuations and the competitive advantage of these businesses? And we think that for certain companies, like in the athleisure space, if you talk about an Adidas or a Nike, or in off-price retail for TJ Maxx, the competitive advantages and the structural drivers for these businesses will still be there, you know, on a 3 to 5 or a 10 year sort of view. Luxury spend, you know, that's been hit because of the exposure to travel. And I think luxury spend is something that will come back. And this is where the multi-brand luxury conglomerates like an LVMH are very well placed relative to maybe a single brand luxury business. And these names are structural winners with very strong balance sheets. So I think certainly while stores are shut, these businesses will be impacted pretty substantially. But I do think that this is somewhat temporary. And if you take a 3 to 5 year view, a lot of these businesses can come out stronger and potentially take even more market share. So look, long-term thinking can take advantage of these opportunities. And I think in discretionary, that's a space that's looking quite interesting with this sell-off.
Hermes, well, on this issue of discretionary consumption and the travel industry in particular, what would you say to investors, or what are your thoughts about the industry? I mean, I know that there are the airlines that we've talked about. There are shipping, the cruise companies, and obviously e-commerce companies. How would you differentiate between all of these?
Look, I think, you know, travel being really in the eye of the storm here is one sector that's been sold off more aggressively than the rest of the market. But what we've seen on travel is that with previous crisis, whether that's 9/11 or SARS, the rebound came through. And I think the inherent demand for travel is there. If you look at the number of hours flown, it was growing at mid-single digit consistently over the last 5 to 10 years. And so outbound travel will come back. But the question is really, but does markets want to see government support becoming more concrete for the airlines and potentially the OEMs in the supply chain? We think that will come through. And players that are strongly placed, like a Bookings, for example, in as a leading dominant player in online travel, or a Safran in terms of exposure to aftermarket engine maintenance, will be well placed to come through for a rebound in travel. But we need to see some more concrete measures come through, I think, before people get confidence, but we do think it'll come through.
All right. Look, I'd like to talk about some other sectors where there have been some big declines connected with commodity prices. And so, you know, specifically, for instance, the oil and gas sector and maybe some of the mining companies. And then also, as a sidebar, just on some of the financial companies where interest rates have come down so much, you know, particularly for the banks, that their net interest margins are essentially collapsing.
Energy and commodities in general is a space we've stayed away. Firstly, it's dependent on a commodity price, which is highly unpredictable. And while we didn't foresee this energy crisis as a result of the Saudi-Russia dispute, as well as low demand, the fact is that energy has consistently proven to be unpredictable because of the exposure to certain exogenous events. We've also had very low return on invested capital in this space for a number of years. In the financial space, look, I think as a result of this crisis, and what we've really been seeing for some time is that, particularly in developed markets, you know, low interest rates heading towards zero in many developed markets are really here to stay for some time. And that certainly will have a negative impact on NIMS for the financials. And there is also a risk of higher NPLs leading into the next 6 to 12 months. So you have two of those really sort of material negative drivers. I think in financials where you still have interesting opportunities are in emerging markets and really leading sector financials such as a HDFC and HDFC Bank can still earn, you know, very attractive returns, even in this potentially lower rate environment. You know, in EM, we're not talking about zero rates, but I think in developed markets, we should expect zero rates to continue for some time.
All right, Hermes. Well, we've run out of time. Thank you very much for your thoughts today. And thank you for your hard work in co-managing the global equities portfolio at Fontobel Quality Growth. So I want to thank you again, and thank you to everyone who's listening to this podcast. We wish you and all your families well. Thank you.
Thanks, Doug.
Disclosure. This recording is for information purposes only, and nothing contained in this recording should constitute a solicitation or offer or a recommendation to buy or sell any investment instruments, to effect any transactions, or to conclude any legal act of any kind whatsoever. Except as permitted under applicable copyright laws, none of this information may be reproduced, adapted, uploaded to a third party, linked to, framed, performed in public, distributed, or transmitted in any form by any process without the specific written consent of Vontobel Asset Management. To the maximum extent permitted by law, Vontobel will not be liable in any way for any loss or damage suffered by you through use or access to this information, or Vontobel's failure to provide this information. Our liability for negligence, breach of contract, or contravention of any law as a result of our failure to provide this information or any part of it, or for any problems with this information, which cannot be lawfully excluded, is limited, at our option and to the maximum extent permitted by law, to resupplying this information or any part of it to you, or to paying for the resupply of this information or any part of it to you. Keep in mind that past performance is not a reliable indicator of current or future performance, and forecasts are inherently limited and should not be relied upon as an indicator of future performance.